forth. I should not be here alone. I can't be trusted. It's too much power. Look what I did without even realizing it. I felt the devastation of this town as a kind of crunching underfoot, like tramping over fallen acorns on the pavement near a city oak. But it was these buildings I was kicking aside, and in the wind of my passing, I never heard my victim's pleas and cries. For the wind sings and screams, but it has no ears and never listens. I have ears. I have eyes. Yet I was far away on a rocky hill, standing there in the ecstasy of power. It was a drug. I have been a god for only an hour or two, and look what I have done. Yet as Sed struggled to save people in the aftermath of his tornado, he also felt a dark and terrible pride. On the one hand, he wanted to weep and beg forgiveness, to take responsibility and bear the consequence. I did this. I will help undo the damage as much as I can. But the most powerful feeling deep inside him was much simpler and filled with the fire of pride. I did this. Look what I can do.
Chapter 3. Intervention. Danny thought he was going to Lorette's house that night for a birthday party. Not the teen movie cliche of a party so huge that it overflows the house and infests the neighbors' yards and results in the police being called. It was just a get-together at Lorette's house in honor of Xena, Lorette's friend, and since he arrived at Parry McClure, Danny's. But when Danny showed up at the house and the door opened at his knock, he knew he'd been had. His friends were all there, the girls Lorette, Sin, Pat, Xena, and the boys Hal and Wheeler. But a big banner high on the wall, plainly visible from the front door, said nothing about birthdays or Xena. It said intervention, and Danny knew at once that he was the target, the patsy, the subject. "What am I supposedly addicted to?" he asked. "He doesn't even get the How I Met Your Mother reference," said Sin. "He doesn't watch television," said Hal. "Wow! We should have intervened about that," said Xena. "When are you going to intervene with Lorette about always showing off her cleavage?" said Danny. "It scares the teachers. They think they're going to fall in and get lost."
"Let's stick to the plan," said Lorette.
"It's not my plan," said Danny.
"You're not going to dodge this one," said Sin.
"You still haven't told me what you're intervening about," said Danny. "Maybe I'll agree with you, and we can move on to the party portion of the evening."
"We want you to stop hiding who you are," said Hal.
Danny turned to him. "I'm President Obama's love child with a Chicago waitress. I'm actually black, but I act super white, and it fools everybody."
"We know you have powers," said Sin.
"You're a fairy," said Xena, "the Tolkien kind."
"Elf is a better word," said Pat.
"No, it's definitely fairy," said Xena, "because it's more fun to say."
"I'm not an elf, and I'm not a fairy," said Danny. "These days, I'm on the track team. I'm going to get a letter and be an athlete, and then I'll be too cool to hang out with you."
"We know you healed us," said Pat.
"My complexion has cleared up totally, and Sin's infected piercings got uninfected." "You didn't do anything for my weight problem," said Xena, "which wasn't very nice."
"Maybe he likes you the way you are," said Wheeler. "I'm trying to think how I did this magical stuff," said Danny.
"It all started happening after you got here. That's point A," said Xena.
"Post hoc ergo propter hoc," said Danny.
"He's talking logic," said Hal.
"I wish Ms. Schrader hadn't done that unit on fallacies."
"Point B," said Xena, "is the tripping place."
"So I heal people and I make them clumsy," said Danny. "Sounds like a contradiction."
"And there's that flying thing with the rope climb," said Hal.
"You're the one who set it up.
You told me to move my hands as if I was climbing.
That means you thought I'd somehow get up there without actually climbing."
"Is that how you remember it?" asked Danny.
"Notice how he's not actually denying it," said Hal.
"I would deny it
if I knew what you were accusing me of.
Danny realized once again that it's always a mistake to equivocate. If you're going to lie, then just lie. Don't try to make it technically true or almost true or true-ish.
I didn't think we should call it an intervention, said Hal. I thought we should call it an ultimatum.
He seemed really angry.
Admit that it's crazy stuff you're accusing me of, or else, said Danny.
That's what an ultimatum is, all right, said Hal.
What's the else? Asked Danny.
Or else you're not really our friend. Danny knew they were right, but also they were wrong. They couldn't possibly understand what telling them would mean. It's one thing to think your friend has some connection with mysterious stuff, but if they found out what he was, they either wouldn't believe him or they'd pressure him to demonstrate it, and he wasn't going to make any more damn gates at Parry McClure.
If you were really my friends, said Danny, you wouldn't decide what the answer is and then threaten to ostracize me if I don't tell you that you're right.
Then what's the answer? Asked Sin. We're not going to tell anybody.
Let's say I admit I'm some kind of fairy. You promise not to tell, but since you already think you know it, and you also promise not to tell, then how would my telling you change anything?
You don't trust us, said Wheeler.
What if I'm some kind of magical guy? Have I done anything evil with it? Hurt anybody?
I think Coach Bleeder landed on his ass a couple of times because of you, said Hal.
Did it ever occur to you that if I had these powers, maybe I was keeping secrets from you for your own good? There are some things that humankind is not meant to know, intoned Lorette.
If I tell you, I have to kill you, quoted Xena.
Let's put the shoe on the other foot where it belongs, said Danny. If we're such good friends, why would you threaten to stop being my friends if I don't tell you something that, if it's true, I clearly want to keep to myself?
Sin stuck out her feet.
How does that put my shoes on the other feet? These are the only feet I have.
Nothing he did was going to help, because Danny knew from the family history where this led. You tell Druthers what you are, then you have to show them, and once they see it, they get scared of you, and either they avoid you or they try to become your servant because it's human nature to want to be close to power. Danny didn't want to find out which way his friends would go. He'd never had friends before, and now he was going to lose them no matter what he did. Better to lose them without their knowing for sure what he was and what he could do.
I accept your terms, said Danny.
They leaned forward expectantly. I'm not going to admit to any of this stuff. So I guess that means we're not friends. Danny walked back to the door.
Wait, said Lorette.
We didn't mean it, said Xena.
I did, said Hal. He sent us a mile into the sky, and if he says he didn't, it's bullshit.
Danny opened the door and stepped outside. He could hear someone, several people, rushing toward the door. He didn't want to play out this scene on the front lawn. So he gated back to his house and pulled the gate in after him. Had he even closed the door behind him? For all he knew, they had seen him disappear. But he was pissed off at them. Why would friends try to force him to tell what he clearly didn't want to tell? They weren't his friends. He barely knew them. So why did he have this gnawing feeling in his gut?
Where did you gate from? Asked a voice.
Hermia was sitting in his living room.
How did you get in? Asked Danny.
I used Vivi's gate, said Hermia. I was visiting her, and I wanted to visit you, but you weren't here, so I waited.
Danny looked at her steadily. What are you doing here?
My family came to me, said Hermia. My actual parents. I was so honored.
Was it a happy reunion? Asked Danny, sitting down across from her in the only other chair in what passed for a living room.
It was all about you, said Hermia. They want you to trust them. They say they won't try to control you. They don't want a war, but they think you need training.
Like I'd ever let any of the Westillians near me.
I'll tell them that, said Hermia.
Are you in their pocket? Do they have some kind of control over you?
Meaning, can you trust me?
Yes and no.
You can trust me to keep my word. But they have some kind of tracking device embedded in me, so wherever I go, they know where I am.
Danny thought about that a moment. So they've seen you jump?
Yes.
By jumping from Vivi's place to here, they know where that gate is.
Yes.
Everywhere you go, you show them the gates.
Yes, said Hermia.
But I told you as soon as I knew, didn't I? What was I supposed to do? Seal myself in a coffin like a vampire and never go anywhere again?
So they know where I am right now.
They know I came to these exact map coordinates, said Hermia. They don't know that you happen to be in this place, but yes, they probably will very soon.
Shit, said Danny. She really didn't have much choice if her own family had decided to track her.
We have to make contact with all the families eventually, said Hermia, including my family, if you intend to make a great gate and share it.
Three cars pulled up out front, one of them actually screeching on the pavement.
How long have you been waiting here? Does your family just hover over you in choppers or balloons or something?
Hermia peeked out the threadbare front curtain.
No. And it isn't your family either.
Danny joined her at the window. His friends were getting out of three cars.
Damn, he said.
Make a clean getaway, said Hermia.
Or gate them somewhere.
I never told them I live here, said Danny.
Hermia flung open the door. Danny said, no, the moment he realized she was doing it, but by then it was already done.
He's here, isn't he? It was Lorette's voice.
We drove three different routes, and he wasn't running on any of them, said Sin triumphantly.
And there's no way he's fast enough to already be here, said Pat.
Not on foot, not even running.
Now they were at the door piling in, but Danny wasn't there. Instead, he was behind the house, out of sight, watching the living room through a peephole, a tiny gate right in front of one of his eyes, so when he closed the other, he could see what was happening in his living room. And he could hear pretty clearly, too.
"Whom are you looking for?" asked Hermia.
"So he's got a girlfriend," said Xena, sounding pretty put out about it.
"Danny North," said Wheeler. "He lives here."
"How interesting," said Hermia. "Who are you?"
"His friends," said Lorette.
"Sounds more like you're stalking him," said Hermia.
"You still haven't told us who you are," said Xena.
"I actually am his friend," said Hermia.
"You sound British," said Xena.
"Cute British accent," said Pat disgustedly. "Boys are so predictable."
"But she has little boobs," said Lorette.
"You're still the fairest in the land, Lorette," said Sin.
"How did he get here so fast?" Hal insisted. Listening outside, Danny thought, Hal is able to stay focused. Hal is something, which is probably why Coach Bleeder zeroed in on him, tormented him, because he has the potential to accomplish far more with his life than Bleeder ever has. No wonder the coach had to take Hal down a peg every chance he got.
"He's a gate mage," said Hermia.
With a thrill of fear, Danny thought, Hermia was telling me to gate them away. Now she's spilling it to them. Nobody was asking what a gate mage is.
"He opens up holes in space-time," said Hermia. "He links one place with another, regardless of distance. He makes them adjacent."
"Do you think you've actually explained something?" asked Pat.
"I've explained it like gravity," said Hermia. "I described the results. I have no idea of the process. That's all that Newton ever did."
"And Danny can do this," said Hal. "Connect things with each other."
"He may be the greatest gate father that ever lived," said Hermia. "But so far, he's mostly used his power to create little gates at your high school."
"What do gates have to do with his healing people?" said Pat.
"Danny doesn't heal anybody, but the gates do," said Hermia. "If you pass through a gate alive, your body arrives in optimal condition."
"No zits," said Pat.
"No piercings," said Sin.
"So why did he lie about it and pretend he wasn't doing it?" asked Xena. "It's way cool."
"Because it's too way cool," said Hermia. "There are a lot of people who want him dead. By making gates at your school, he ran the risk of being discovered. That business with the rope climb? The worst thing happened. His family showed up and tried to kill him."
Silence. Then, in a smaller voice, Lorette said,
"His own family?"
"I thought his parents were dead," said Hal.
"A lie," said Hermia. "His parents are actually very powerful mages. To their credit, they didn't try to kill him. It was his grandfather and uncle who attempted his assassination."
"Sick," said Wheeler.
There's a lot of history that you don't know, said Hermia. And most of it is unbelievable to people like you.
What do you mean, people like us? Asked Pat.
Normal people, said Hermia.
Wheeler laughed. Did you hear that? She called us normal.
Let me help you understand this, said Hermia. Danny's father is named Odin. He was born with the name Alf, but when he became head of the North family, he took the name Odin.
Wow, said Wheeler. You're talking like a god.
I'm telling you that the gods of mythology are real people. Only each name has been recycled again and again. We're not immortal, but the names are.
So who is Danny? Asked Hal. Is he a god?
If his family stops trying to kill him and accepts him for who he is, then the name he would be given is Loki.
Thor's nasty brother in the Avengers, said Wheeler.
There's no magic hammer, said Hermia. But yes, there's a Thor in the family, but he doesn't amount to much. None of them do.
And then she explained how the great gates work.
Danny sat outside listening.
Hermia was good at explanations. Why shouldn't she be? Gate mages had the gift of language. It terrified him to hear her telling his friends. But he also knew that this is what he had wanted to do. This is why he didn't gate away from them. This is why he hadn't left Parry McClure High School. This is why he had carelessly let them realize his power as he returned home far faster than his feet could have carried him. He wanted them to know. He wanted to be honest with them. But he couldn't bring himself to answer their questions. Hermia was doing it for him. When she finished her explanation, she said, "Now I've told you the answers to your questions. Do you believe me?"
"Yes," said Pat and Wheeler and Sin and Hal.
"Why?" asked Hermia.
"Because I rode the rope," said Hal.
"Because he cured my piercings," said Sin.
"My face," said Pat.
"Because it's so cool," said Wheeler.
"And the rest of you?"
"It's pretty hard to swallow," said Lorette.
"How do you know all this stuff? I never heard of you."
"I'm a gate mage, too," said Hermia. "A lesser one. I can't make gates, but I can see them, and I can lock them, and I can help Danny. But now you all have a choice to make."
They waited.
"Are you with him or not?" asked Hermia.
"That's why he was afraid to tell you, because once he did, you'd have to make the choice."
"What do you mean, with him?" asked Hal.
"He's got this incredible power. What does he need from us?"
"What the gods have always needed," said Hermia.
"Servants."
"Consternation. Outrage."
"I thought we were his friends," said Lorette.
"Are you his equals?" asked Hermia.
"Are you?
When the others come to kill him, what do you think you can do?
When Danny's mother electrocutes you or his father makes your car stop working, and any gun you point at them fails to work, and a hawk comes to peck out your eyes, can you stand up to them?"
"Duh," said Lorette.
"We're useless," said Hal.
"So why would he need us?"
"That's why I didn't say that he needs soldiers or allies. He needs servants. He needs people he can send with messages, people to watch and notice things and tell him about them."
"Spies," said Pat.
"And messengers," said Hermia.
"The families will know you're powerless. With any luck, they won't kill you.
But they could, if you piss them off. Do you understand? You're powerless, but you can help Danny to put together some kind of peace treaty, some way to unite the families and share some of his power with them."
"And why would we want to do that?" asked Zena. "If these gods actually, like, exist, why would we want Danny to give them more power?"
"Because if he doesn't, they'll kill him," said Hermia. "It's a matter of time, that's all.
Are you his friends or not? You're the ones who demanded the truth, so here it is. Now you have a choice. With him or not with him?"
"With him," said Hal.
"Slow down," said Pat. "This is major."
Hermia had done all she could, all that Danny needed her to do. Now it was time for Danny to face his friends again. He had been a coward to leave it up to her. So he gated into the house. He appeared in the middle of the room. They stared at him in fear.
"It's true," whispered Lorette.
"Cool," said Wheeler.
Danny turned to Wheeler. This isn't a comic book, Wheeler. It doesn't go from panel to panel until the good guys win. In the real world, good guys lose all the time. What wins is power. I have a lot of it, but I don't have enough to protect you all the time. I advise you to get the hell away from me and pretend you never met me. With any luck, none of the families will notice you, and you'll be as safe as anyone. How safe is that? Asked Pat. If I create a great gate, and the families send people through so they become gods again instead of elves and wizards the way they are now, then you won't have a choice anymore. You'll stay out of their way, and if they notice you, you'll do what you're told or you'll die. Our families aren't nice people. They call you drowthers. They think of you the way you think of cars, useful when you need them, but fun to crash into each other and watch them blow up and burn. They were looking sick and scared, so Danny was communicating. Do you see why I tried not to tell you? Said Danny. I think you're just trying to scare us, said Xena defiantly. Is it working? Asked Danny. Yes, said Lorette. Good, said Danny. I came here in hopes of having a normal life. 2 years of high school. But then I got stupid and did that thing with the rope climb, and Hermia saw it and told me that it was a great gate. I finally got the knowledge to do some really powerful stuff. But it sounds terrible, said Sin. Why would you let them through? Here's how it'll work, said Danny. Either I'll work out a way to give all the families equal access to a great gate, or one of the families will kidnap somebody I care about and kill them if I don't give them exclusive use of a great gate. Who would they kidnap? Asked Hal. Hermia, the woman who pretends to be my aunt. Or maybe you, Hal. It depends on how much they've observed already. And if they kidnapped Hal, said Lorette, what would you do? He'd let them kill Hal, said Hermia. He'd let them kill me. Because if he lets one family have a great gate and not the others, then that means that the most violent and evil family will rule the world. But if they all have a share of the gate, then maybe, just maybe, they'll balance each other out. Maybe they'll avoid a war. Maybe you drowthers won't all end up as collateral damage. Is she right? Hal asked Danny. I hope so, said Danny. But if it came down to it, I don't know if I could do it. Let them kill you or her or anybody. Up to now, the only life I was risking was my own. But once I made a great gate, everything changed. Now the whole world is at risk. But you can do things, said Hal. Like, if you'd been around for 9/11, you could have made those planes. No, I couldn't have done a thing, said Danny. Because I would have found out about it when everybody else did by watching television. I've got a couple of talents, but I'm not really a god. Not like you're thinking, a god that knows everything and can do anything he wants. I can do a few specific things, and I don't know very much at all. Then what good is it? Asked Pat. Not much, said Danny. All I can do is try to keep the damage to a minimum. So what's your choice? Said Hermia. My family's on the way here right now. You can count on that. If you're going to choose not to stand with Danny, then he's got to get you away from here before they come. Go get in your cars and drive away, and forget you ever knew Danny. Don't do anything to tip off the families that you're his friends, or you will end up as hostages. Get it? Shit, said Sin. That's terrible. Exactly, said Hermia. Why did you make a great gate, man? Asked Hal. Because I'm a servant of space-time, said Danny. Because it's what I was born for. Because I faced a powerful enemy and beat him. Because I'm stupid. There's a feeble chance, said Hermia, that it will be better. For instance, Danny's father and mother. If they went through a great gate, maybe they'd come back and use their power to destroy all the nuclear weapons in the world. Could they do that? Asked Hal. The question is, would they? Said Hermia. The families don't have a history of trying to make life better for the drowthers. Drowthers. That's us? Asked Xena. It sounds like the N-word, said Pat. It's exactly like the N-word, the way most people in the families use it, said Danny. But some of us want to use our power to protect you. Don't let them through the gate, man, said Hal. I told you how they'll make him do it, said Hermia.
Then kill yourself first, said Hal. That's what I'd do.
The words hung in the air.
Maybe you would, said Danny. But I'm not that kind of hero. I'm not any kind of hero.
With great power comes great responsibility, intoned Wheeler.
If only, said Danny.
In the real world, with great power comes great suffering by the people who don't have the power.
I wasn't kidding, said Hal. You shouldn't exist. If you didn't exist, things would keep on going the way they have been since you gods stopped being godlike.
Space-time would only create another like me, said Danny. And maybe the next guy would be even worse than me.
Danny did use his power to help us, said Lorette.
You were knocking Coach Bleeder on his ass, said Hal.
And making him drop his watch, said Danny.
To protect me? Asked Hal.
And because it was funny, said Danny.
It was funny, said Hal.
Are you going to destroy the world, Danny? Asked Sin.
I hope not, said Danny.
Here's what I hope. I hope that the families will unite to use their power to stop all wars, to stop all the terrorists, to put an end to all the shit.
Did they ever do that before? Back before the gates were closed? Asked Hal.
No, said Danny.
Why would it be any different now? Said Hal.
Because Danny's here, said Hermia. If one of the families starts acting like Stalin or Pol Pot or Idi Amin, Danny has the power to gate him to the bottom of the Atlantic, and they know it. They've got no way to stop him. As long as Danny's alive, he has a chance to keep it all under control.
So you're going to be like the god of all gods, said Hal.
Danny sat down.
Yeah, he said. Plus graduate from high school on schedule, said Hal.
Maybe I'm not going to be able to pull that off, said Danny.
Why did you ever think you could? Asked Pat.
Because I didn't know I could make a great gate when I came here, said Danny. I didn't know anything. I just wanted to be normal.
Hal made a weighing motion with his hands.
Normal or supreme god? Supreme god or normal? So hard to decide.
Then Hal reached out his hand to Danny, offering a handshake.
I'm in, said Hal.
In what?
In the same shit soup as you, said Hal. I'm your messenger, or servant, or whatever you need. I think you're a good guy. I think if anybody's going to have this kind of power, I'd rather it be you than anybody else I can think of, except maybe Winston Churchill, and he's dead.
Danny solemnly took his hand.
So Hal gets to be your right-hand man, said Wheeler, just because he was willing to talk to you when you came to Parry McClure High.
Because he's my friend, said Danny. And he volunteered.
Well, I volunteer too, said Wheeler.
And in a few moments they had all agreed.
So get in your cars, said Danny, and get away from here.
I thought that was what we'd do if we said no, said Lorette.
I don't want Hermia's people to know about you, not yet. Go. You're my friends. Your intervention worked. We've told you everything that we know. We didn't pretty it up. And you chose to stand with me. So the first thing is, if I say get out of here, you get out. So they can't use you as hostages to control me.
They nodded.
Don't act like Drowthers, said Hermia impatiently. He doesn't want nodding. He wants going. And with that, Danny gated them all, one at a time, out to the cars.
After a moment of disorientation and confusion, they scrambled into the cars and drove away.
That was what you wanted, wasn't it? Asked Hermia.
You wanted me to tell them, right?
I didn't know that's what I wanted until you did it, said Danny.
But yes, they asked for the truth. They're not children, they're people. They deserve to have the knowledge to choose for themselves.
They made a stupid decision, said Hermia.
True, said Danny.
But all the decisions are stupid. I've made nothing but stupid decisions.
You too.
Hermia grinned.
When there aren't any smart decisions, I suppose you just have to pick the stupid decision you like best.
Your family is coming, right? Asked Danny.
I can't imagine they're not.
Then it's time to move to a different location, said Danny.
It's time for me to move to one place and you to another, said Hermia.
Until we're ready to set up the meeting we want.
because they'll always know where I am, and we don't want them to know where you are. So Danny gated Hermia to a place she knew in Paris. Then he wrote a note to the Greeks and left it on the table in his own little house in Buena Vista. "I will let you send two people through a great gate," said the note. "Go home and wait for my messenger. After today, anybody from any family who comes to this town will be sent to the moon. Leave now." Danny opened the front door so they wouldn't have to break it down. No reason for the landlord to lose money. Then Danny gated to Washington, D.C., then on to Staunton, to Lexington, and then to Naples, Florida, gathering in his gates behind him so they couldn't trace him if they happened to have a gate sniffer that Hermia didn't know about. Vivi knew at once that he had come through a gate into her condo. She came up from the beach through the gate he had left there for her.
"Just in time for the season finale of The Good Wife," she said.
"Is that a TV show?" asked Danny.
"It's pure fantasy," she said. "There are no good wives."
"What about good husbands?" asked Danny.
"We'll see. When you grow up." "Want a sandwich?"
"I'll make my own," he said. "We told all my friends about what I can do."
"Well, that was selfish and stupid of you."
"They insisted," said Danny.
"That was stupid of them. But they didn't know what they were asking. You have no excuse."
"I know," said Danny. "But other people are going to be involved whether we like it or not. Might as well have some of them on our team on purpose by their own choice." Vivi shrugged, then laughed.
"It's going to be so entertaining to see how this all comes out. Right up to the moment when everything goes up in smoke."
"We're gods," said Danny. "What could go wrong?"
Chapter 4. Captive. Wad was so very old that even his own grief and rage could not hold him deeply. Not for long. The being who had dwelt inside a tree for 14 centuries, watching for only one thing, a gate between worlds, was not fully engaged in being a human being. Not yet. Perhaps not ever. Wad was a watcher above all. Yes, he had been taken as the lover of a queen. Yes, he had loved his son, had tried to protect him, and then had been outwitted by his lover, his enemy, Queen Bexoy, and his son was dead. Yes, he had imprisoned an innocent woman and her sons, then set them free. Surely this qualified as having been truly alive. But Wad was still watching, not only seeing what lay outside himself as he had done creeping through the castle at Camesham, but also what was happening inside himself, where his gate sense lay. In his early life as Loki, and then for centuries as the gate thief, Wad had captured and held the gates of other mages, but never had a gate of his own been taken from him. So he had not understood what it was like to have his out-self captive in another mage's heart hoard. Of course it was well known what happened to other mages when their out-self was taken captive, how they lay inert, comatose, waiting for their wandering self to return. But they were not gate mages. Their out-selves were usually indivisible. Only the greatest of mages could control multiple clans or ride several heart-beasts at once, and even they suffered from the self-division. Gate mages, though, were divisible by nature. They could leave bits of themselves here and there forever, as gates that others could use, always aware of where they were, but never putting their whole attention into any one gate. Which is why, when Wad stole all the gates from mage after mage, he did not leave their bodies empty and helpless. They were able to continue their lives almost normally. Wad had therefore believed that he had done them no real harm. They were still themselves, still alive and aware, still able to control their own bodies. He had not understood. When the new gate father from Middlegard stole most of Wad's gates from his heart hoard, including all the gates that Wad had stolen from others over the years, at first, Wad could only think about the handful of gates that he still had under his own control. He had used those gates to save Anonwe, King Priard's concubine, and her two sons, Eliuic and Anob. He still had some power. He was still a mage. But now, without an urgent task, he realized what he had not understood before. More of the gate mages in his gates than Wad had ever supposed. For he was still aware of his stolen gates. He still knew exactly where they were. He felt them all the time. He just couldn't do anything with them. Yet, like the outself of a beast mage riding with the heart beast, or like a clant raised from plants or stones or sand or water or fire, his stolen gates were aware, alert, sensing what the possessor of the gates was doing, seeing, hearing. And the longer Wad concentrated on his stolen gates, the more he was able to get glimpses of what the other gate mage wanted, what he planned, what he needed, what he hungered for. It was not quite words. Always the words remained just out of reach. Unless this thief, this gate father, this Danny North, spoke his thoughts aloud, Wad could not gather them up and study them. But as surely as if he were a beast mage, Wad could feel the inner longings of this man. No, this boy. He could not change anything, could not take control of him. Danny North was master, and there was not enough of Wad within his captured gates for him to hope to take control. The deepest self of a gate mage was not in his outselves, the way it was with other kinds of mages. This was why gate mages could raise no clans. But the gates were still a part of him, and so now he was a part of Danny North. And all the gates that Wad had stolen over the centuries, they had felt the same. The mages were not as strong as Wad, and so perhaps they had not felt themselves inside him as clearly as Wad now felt himself inside Danny North. But they must have been aware. And because Wad had lived on and on inside the tree, the captured gates had not faded and died after their mages died. They were all still alive. Wad had suppressed them, kept them silent. But they had been watching. They knew him as no one could ever know another human being from the heart out, unless man-mages also had such deep understanding. In only a few days inside Danny North, Wad knew him intimately, the feel of him, the kind of man he was, the loves and fears and hopes and hates of him. So in these 14 centuries... how well did the other gate mages still shadowed in Wad's heart hoard come to know him? And now, their knowledge was inside Danny North. Wad could feel them, too, the gates that were fellow captives of this boyish gate father. He realized now that he knew them all, that even as he suppressed their cries, the tumult of their rage and despair, their surges of will, he had come to know them. They had been a part of him. And now that they were gone, he missed that intimate connection. At such great distance, in another man's heart hoard on another world, he longed to listen to them now. The trouble was, they hated him. Even inside Danny North's heart hoard, they stayed as far from Wad's gates as they could. For even there, Wad's power was great, his hoard of gates vast indeed compared to theirs, though all of them were puny before the billion gates that belonged to Danny North himself. The other gates, the remnants of so many dead mages, still feared and hated Wad. And loved Danny North. That was what astonished Wad when he understood it. These gates were no less captive than they had been before. Danny North had not set them free. Yet they responded to their new master as if he had liberated them. As much as they had hated, still hated, Wad, they loved this boy. That was what Wad now struggled to understand. I was a good man, thought Wad. When I walked two worlds under the name of Loki, I saw the great danger that both worlds faced from the dark man-mages from the world of Bel, the possessors of men's bodies and souls. And I sacrificed everything to save the worlds from the dragons of Bel. Did that not make me the best of men? Yet they never came to understand the nobility and greatness of my cause. Centuries inside me, and their hatred never relented. Inside Danny North, though, they seemed to blossom, to come to new life. A pathetic, shadowy life, but life it was. They were still alert, still aware, but calm, not seething as they had done inside Wad. They liked Danny North. They liked living inside him. They liked seeing the world through his eyes. They were at peace with him. And they were not fading, even now. Nor are my gates fading, though they are apart from me, thought Wad. In fact, my gates thrive there. I, too, am more at peace inside Danny North than I am inside myself. That was Wad's great discovery. The reason he could bear the death of his son, the betrayal of Queen Bexoy, the agony of his own guilt for what he had done to Anonoe and her sons, and the terror of having lost almost all his power, was that Danny North held a huge part of Wad inside a heart that was astonishingly pure and at peace. Danny North was good. Undisciplined, untrained, raw, confused, afraid, young. Yet even so, his character was fully formed, as it is in all people by the time they reach the age of understanding. As it is, perhaps, from the moment they are conceived. And the person that Danny North revealed himself to be by those who were held against their will inside his heart was decent to the core. Am I not decent, too? Why was dwelling in my heart hoard such a torment? And dwelling in his is an experience of healing, rest, calm, comfort. Maybe the difference is this. The first thing I tried to do, when I realized I was still alert and aware inside of Danny North, was to exert some kind of control over him. My first instinct was to rule. But Danny North does not want to rule over anybody. The poor child, so much power and no idea of what it's for. He did not eat my gates because he saw me as a rival. He was merely trying to survive, to hold on to himself. He does not want to rule the worlds. He does not even want to be the hero who saves the worlds. What does he want? Who is this boy? And why, when he is so utterly different from me, do I find myself so glad of his company? Danny North was such a compelling presence in Wad's mind that it took Wad days to realize that he knew something very important about events here on Westall. There was a new mage in the world, a mage who had passed through a great gate. The powers of the great gate still clung to him. It was as if his footfalls reverberated like temblors through the deepest rock of the world and made the slightest of vibrations in Wad's gate sense. Even though the great gate had not been of his making, the disturbance in space-time could not be hidden from an old gate father like Wad. What was he? What magic was this interloper doing? Whatever it was, the world was waking up before this surge of magic. No one had exercised such bright power since the closing of the great gates 14 centuries before. Whatever Danny North was doing in Middlegard, Wad was here on Westall. And this new great mage was Wad's business. And because Wad was not as decent, as unambitious as Danny North, his first thought was this. How can I harness the great power of this new great mage and use it to wreak vengeance on my enemy, Queen Bexoy, and make her suffer as I have suffered.
Chapter 5 Assassins. By the time Danny got to the farm in Yellow Springs, Marion had already suspended a rope over the central beam of the cow barn.
Ladder work? Asked Danny.
I'm a cobble friend, said Marion. I can't fly, nor can my clants, such as they are.
Then why didn't you wait for me to make a gate and carry the rope up there? Asked Danny.
Hard for you to believe, I know, Danny. But before you ever came to this farm, I was able to wipe my butt all by myself.
Danny grinned. Are you suggesting that you want me to install a rectal gate? Outbound only, I promise.
Marion made as if to smack Danny, though he never had and never would. But then he stopped.
Could you? He asked.
Not rectal, but a gate that's attached to a person instead of to a place.
When Hermia gets here, said Danny.
Hermia, Vivi, they'll only know what's in books.
And I only know what I've tried, said Danny. All those years I tried to figure out how to lock gates and how to take them back inside myself, and I couldn't figure any of it out until I saw it done.
Somebody had to be the first gate mage, said Marion. And from what Hermia says, if you can trust a Greek.
It's only a problem if they're bearing gifts, said Danny. And she's Pelasgian.
From what she says, you may be the most extravagantly gifted gate mage ever. So you're going to have to break new ground to reach your potential.
Parents always think their children have more potential than they actually have, said Danny.
What about gate mage surgery? Asked Marion.
Those tracking devices inside Hermia. Can't you gate them out of her?
I have a map in my head of all the gates I've made, said Danny. But I can't map the inside of a person's body. Going through a gate heals people of any injuries or dysfunctions. But if I start making gates to remove bits of Hermia, it would only be by chance if I found the tracking devices her family installed in her. At least now I understand why you want a gate up to the roof beam to hang a rope. It's something you know you can do.
Don't you mostly do things you know you can do? Asked Danny, a little resentful now.
Yes, said Marion. Tell me, if you took one end of the rope down here, then gated to the roof beam, would the rope just follow you and string out from here to there, or would it get cut off where the gate began?
It would look cut off, said Danny, but it would still be connected. It would go up to the mouth of the gate down here, and the very next inch of rope would then emerge from the gate up there.
Marion shook his head. Stone mages like me believe in solid connections, not sudden leaps through space-time.
Where's Mom? Asked Danny.
Out scouting for anybody's clant or heart beast. You're making a great gate again, which is exactly what all the families want, not to mention rogue orphans we might not even know about.
I can't believe that passing through a great gate allowed her to sense anybody's outself within a couple of miles, said Danny.
And I can feel all the disturbances in the rock, not to mention the flow patterns for 100 miles in every direction. There's a reason why people had to go through great gates before the drowthers deigned to call them gods.
So that's what you and Mom are now? Asked Danny. Gods?
If I had already been a stone father and then went through a great gate, then yes, I think I could put on a show that would make drowthers feel a strong desire to let me have my way. But as a cobble friend, let's just say that my affinity is much more useful. I have more to give the stone, and so the stone replies with greater strength, that's all.
Danny stood there looking at the ground, thinking of how Marion had opened up the earth near Parry McClure High School and swallowed a pickup truck, thinking, what will I be able to do after I go through a great gate? And Vivi and Hermia? What does it do to a gate mage? Wasn't that what they were making this great gate to find out? With no gate thief left to threaten him, and with Marion and Leslie primed to keep all danger at bay, Danny could experiment a little. He could stay a minute or two on Westall, not very long, not long enough to be in danger, but long enough to see the place where Marion and Leslie had lingered for only a fraction of a second.
We blinked and then came back, Marion explained at the time.
It was daylight and there were rocks and grass, that's all I know.
And he only knows about the grass because I told him, Leslie had said.
Stone mages don't care about grass, but cow sisters have a real eye for it. Danny put a little weight on the rope that Marion had suspended. He was so hungry to make a great gate that he almost couldn't wait until the others arrived. No, that wasn't true. Danny wasn't hungry for it. What he was feeling as a powerful yearning was coming from many of the outselves trapped inside him. The gate thief's old prisoners. Not the gate thief himself. His gates were all about blocking great gates, stealing them, not using them, and certainly not building them. Could Danny use some of the captive outselves in making a great gate as if they were his own? Hermia had told him that in the old days, mere path brothers would sometimes contribute to a gate father their 3 or 4 or 12 gates to help reach the critical mass to make a great gate. Danny tried to make one of the gates he had taken from the gate thief to make an ordinary gate. The result was almost a physical pain. The rebuff was so sharp and strong. No! It felt like a shout from somewhere deep inside him. Not the word no, but the meaning of it. The idea of utter rejection. Apparently, Danny could not force another mage's gate. In Hermia's account, the Path Brothers would donate their gates willingly. This gate had been stolen from a mage who most assuredly did not want his enemy using a part of his outself to make gates. It made sense. If gate fathers could make use of stolen gates, then they'd have stolen them all the time. The gate thief wasn't taking gates in order to use them. He was taking them in order to prevent their being used. And again he wondered why. Something about the Semitic gods, something about Bel, the ancient Carthaginian deity. I won a battle when I beat the gate thief, but I didn't even know what war I was fighting in. For all I know, I just intervened in the American Revolution on the side of the British. I have no idea who the good guys are. There are so many enemies. But what if my enemies are right to want to destroy me? What if my defeating the gate thief was the worst thing that ever happened in history?
Stop brooding, Danny. It makes your mouth turn sour, said Vivi.
So she had taken the gate from Naples, Florida. She was almost quivering with excitement. This great gate was more for her than anyone. After all her years of not knowing whether she was a gate mage or not, her complete vindication upon finding Danny's gates and realizing she could unlock them had been the greatest joy of her life. But then came the frustration of not being able to do anything but unlock gates. That, and teach Danny all the gate lore she had learned in a lifetime of study. Now she had hope, however meager, that by passing through a great gate she might have her power augmented in some interesting way. It was all she had talked about whenever there was nothing else to talk about, so that Danny knew that it was where her thoughts always turned in moments of idleness. She hadn't nagged him, but he felt the pressure of her yearning all the same. He felt some of the same curiosity himself, and Hermia was, if anything, even more in need of some kind of boost to her abilities, since as a lock friend she could only close gates that Danny wasn't leaving open anyway. But Hermia's presence here would be dangerous, since she would bring her family soon after. So she and Danny, left to themselves, might have waited. Danny, for his part, was afraid. Yes, he had beaten the gate thief before, but that might have been a fluke. What if the gate thief was waiting for him again, this time prepared for him, this time armed in some terrible way? It could be something as simple as a sword. Danny appears, the gate thief swings a mighty sword, plop goes Danny's head, and even if somebody dragged him through a gate, even a great gate, and even that they set his head on his neck and held it there through the passage, Danny didn't think the healing properties of gate travel would do the trick. It wouldn't happen. There was no way the gate thief could know where Danny's new great gate would appear on Westall. Danny didn't even know. It does look so unfortunately like a gallows, said Vivi, looking up at the rope and then down to the dangling end. Did Marion have to put a noose in it? It's not a noose, it's a loop, said Danny. It's so I don't have to hold on so tightly while I spin. I want to have my mind clear.
You could just spin around on the ground like a dervish, said Vivi.
I made the gate on the end of a rope last time, said Danny. So until I know more, I'm doing it the same way this time. For all we know, the strength or endurance or power of the gate depends on the speed of my spin. Or it has no effect at all. Time to experiment with that is after we gate mages have passed through the gate ourselves.
And back again, said Vivi.
Danny knew what she was thinking of. We don't know for sure if Sed decided to stay there or not. All it would have taken was a moment's hesitation. The gate thief was on me almost instantly. It could easily have been Marion and Leslie trapped there as well.
Stone appeared at the tail of the gate to his house in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Vivi, he said.
Vivi? She said indignantly. Not my darling, or my love, or...
Oh, glorious gate mage, said Stone. Oh, most admirable of women. Oh, thou wife.
There we go, said Vivi, preening playfully. It may take a little prompting, but you know how to make a girl feel all princessy.
It'll be interesting to see what a meadow friend becomes after passing through the great gate. I have visions of being able to make every lawn in America grow so rapidly, with grass so tall, that people can't find their houses.
And the buffalo herds return to roam all over North America, consuming lawn grass at a prodigious rate, and yet the grass leaps ever higher, said Vivi.
Grass growing from cracks in the sidewalks and asphalt tears it all into little chunks, said Stone. In this profuse jungle of life, no vehicle can move. Even helicopters can't land for longer than a minute or two before grass grows up so thick that the blades can't turn again.
And 300 million people die of starvation, said Danny dryly.
But the vast lawns make such a lovely cemetery, said Vivi.
Don't worry, Danny. Even if I could do it, I wouldn't, said Stone. Lawns are the least interesting plants in the world. Everything interesting has been bred out of them. A true meadow has at least 100 different species of grass clumping here and there, with 1,000 wildflowers and bulbs and tubers and mosses and ferns and...
Daylilies, said Vivi. I do love daylilies.
The poodles of the plant world, said Stone scornfully.
So pretty, said Vivi. Alone or in great fields of them. Don't leave them out of our meadow, darling.
Stone looked at Danny and rolled his eyes.
I saw that, Peter, said Vivi.
Eye-rolling is rude.
Rude but necessary, said Stone, for your own good. Make your gate, Danny. The longer I stay here talking with Vivi, the more extravagant the trouble I'll get myself into.
I'll tell Hermia we're ready, said Danny.
Because his gate sense already told him exactly where the gate he had made for her in Rio was, her latest hiding place, the theory being that if she had to keep moving around, at least she could go to warm and interesting places, he was able to make a new gate straight there.
She wasn't in her hotel room. That was a surprise. She knew that it was nearly time for the making of the great gate. She was supposed to be waiting.
Danny immediately made a return gate and stepped toward it just as the shotgun blast went off. He felt the pellets tear through his body, and then no pain at all because he had passed through the gate back to the barn. He still gasped from the pain he no longer felt, and the others turned toward him.
They found Hermia, said Danny.
She wasn't there, and they weren't waiting around to talk about it.
Are you hurt? Asked Vivi, fingering his tattered shirt.
I was for a moment, said Danny. I may still have all the pellets in me. I can work on that later. The gate healed the wounds, and I have to find Hermia.
It can't be her own people, said Stone. The Greeks may do many terrible things, but they wouldn't kill the world's only living gate mage.
But they're the only ones who could track her, said Danny.
They might be tracking the trackers, said Marion. Or they might have a sniffer of their own, whoever they are, said Stone. The Greeks track Hermia, but a sniffer could simply have found your gate and then waited for you.
Some fanatic group that really thinks we shouldn't go back to Westall? Asked Vivi.
Or some minions of the gate thief, said Marion.
I'm going to look, said Danny. He made a tiny gate, really just a viewport, that showed him the room where someone had shot him.
Two men were standing there, one carrying a shotgun.
I know I hit him before he disappeared, said one.
Danny made a gate and pulled it over them. They arrived 20 feet above some spot out